I'd like to call the meeting at 9:00 in the morning.
Yeah, she'll be here pretty quick.
Please silence your cell phones. And our, this one meeting, we've set aside time to hear from the general public. If you're interested in providing comments or questions about the meeting, please, I hope you filled out a card and any cards. Seeing that nobody is wanting to speak, we'll go straight to our agenda items. Our first item on the agenda is report and possible discussion on activity report for plan year to ending, well, excuse me, February 28th, 2025.
Good morning. Yes, so this is just some summary information that gets provided to us from Principal Group. Principal Group holds the assets for this plan. And take a minute real quick to introduce Karen Epps.
Hello.
She's representing Principal Group here today. This first slide is just kind of the makeup of the people who are participating in this plan. So we have 170 participants who are actually receiving benefits at this time. Active participants, it's 43 people who are still employed by the BRA but will get benefits from this plan when they retire. And then we have 100 people who used to work for the BRA. They've terminated from the BRA, but they will receive benefits when they retire. And so that's a total of 313. That's down from 314 last year and 320 the year before. And then this is a summary of the financial end of it. And you see we kind of started out, we started out the year our beginning market value of $23.7 million. We've ended the year at $25.0 million, so that's an increase of about $1.3 million, and that's mainly due to investment income. We contributed $1.1 million to the plan back in September of 2024. There you can see our investment income to give us our total receipts. We paid out about $2.3 million in benefits over the year. Expenses to the plan, our investment advisor, which used to be ANCO and is now Mariner, and then Baker Tilly for our audit. My Heart for our actuary, and we should have an expense there, but it's just timing that's going to show up this year. Our fiduciary bond on this plan is $16,800, and then Principal Group's fees for administering the plan. And so that gave us a total increase of about $1.3 million for the year. And that's all I have on that.
Any comments or questions from the committee? That's a good year. Second item on the agenda is report and possible discussion on the pension advisory report from Mariner International, written by Tony Kay with Eric.
Thank you. Good morning. Going to be tough to follow that one up, but I'll try. It is easy to be brief when the market returns have been good. So
take credit for it, Tony. Take credit for it.
We'll try to do that a little bit. But this report takes you through June 30th of 2025. You can see total market value up to $25.2 million, and then that asset appreciation of $1.1 million, plus almost $500,000 in income. So that's dividends and distributions, largely off the fixed income portfolio. That's been a meaningful piece as well. Top line here. Performance for the quarter, and again, this is through June 30th, really strong performance for the quarter. Total portfolio is up 7.4% net of investment management fees. And you can see longer term, 1 year and out, elevated rates of return as well, double digits. 3 year return at 11.6%. So that is a compounded annualized rate of return, and again, net of fees, nicely above the plan's benchmark at 10.4%, so more than 1% above the benchmark, and again, elevated above the actuarial assumed rate of return, which really is the end goal here. Two goals for the portfolio, and this is dictated in the investment policy statement. So first goal, exceed that actuarial assumed rate of return of 6.5% over the 5 year period. Done that by a wide margin, again, more than 10% net of fees. And then again, outperformed that policy benchmark over that same 5-year period doing that as well. So, you know, kind of peeling that back a little bit, when you look at the underlying investment managers, largely outperforming their respective benchmarks, good asset allocation, and that's how you get to those return figures there. Next page of the report shows our asset allocation targets and where we were, again, as of June 30th. We work closely with Michelle, staff, and principal to really monitor this on an ongoing basis. We're obviously thankful for the market returns that we've enjoyed, but we know that markets don't always go up. So how do we kind of continue to introduce prudence and risk reduction in the portfolio? And that's by maintaining a posture close to target. So month in, month out, when we're working to raise cash for benefit payments, we're looking at this asset allocation, saying, okay, what part of the portfolio has run up, maybe become a little bit expensive, and that's where we're taking assets from. So long way of saying, over the last 12 months, we've largely been cutting back the equity exposure for the stocks as the stock market has run up. And that, again, naturally reduces risk in the portfolio. So
you're rebalancing monthly?
Correct, yeah. Rebalancing monthly using cash flow activity to keep us close to target. And since that's, you know, obviously for a closed fund, cash flow negative fund, that helps us monitor that pretty closely. I think that's it. Is that it for me?
That's all the slides you sent me.
Pause there. Take any questions. Last thing I'll say, I did say a pause and take questions, but before that, I can't help myself for the quarter and then that 5-year period. This is in a full report that we send out. We also show peer universe ranks versus public pension plans. And these are not just Mariner clients. This is a robust sample set of hundreds of pension plans across the country. You are in the top quartile for that time period as well. And I would suggest doing so with a very cost-effective portfolio and not an overly risky portfolio, so very diversified. So now I will actually pause and open up to any more questions.
Questions or comments for Tony? Great reports when everything's good in the market.
Absolutely.
Our next agenda item is a report discussion, annual actuarial report presented by Jen Turk.
There we go. I'm Jen Turk, actuary for the pension plan. So we have the March 1st, 2025 valuation results we wanted to share. So this is the annual valuation is kind of the plan year, and we also calculate the GASB for the accounting at the same time that you guys use. We are mostly concentrating on the funding valuation here, which comes up with your contribution each year. So over the last year, for year ending March 1st, we had about an 11.1% return, so still along the lines of what it is now, it sounds like. Contributions that you mentioned were just over 1.1 million. The liabilities came in as close as you can expect. We're never going to predict the future perfectly, but they were pretty close, about a 0.5% higher than we kind of would have expected given the activity during the year. You can see your plan funding level continues to ramp up. Went from just over or just under 77 up to just over 80. So we had a gain on the assets, and then that was offset just by that small liability loss. And that 80.1%, that's using the smoothed value of assets. So for the plan, we don't recognize all of that volatility that every year you'd have your contribution going up and down. So we smooth assets, so you only recognize 20% of a gain or loss each year. So that kind of ends up being your effective asset funding value. So that's at 80.1. If you ignore all the smoothing, we were at 82.9% on just, you know, what's in the trust. So the recommended contribution is slightly lower than it was last year at $1,660,000. So down just, you can see, about $600,000 from last year. And then some of the kind of looking forward, we're gonna continue to look at projections each year, so we can see what the contributions might do under a couple different scenarios. We keep looking at that discount rate to make sure the 6.5 is still appropriate, which it is compared to, especially compared to your peer group. You're pretty conservative. And then we have just a small item that we wanna update for the next valuation for the 2026. There's some new mortality tables that were released, so we'll look at a quick kind of what that might look like if we change that table. The demographics, I think Michelle carried, you know, gave you some of the counts and stuff that are on that left-hand side. So we're at 313 right now. One thing I would point out on here, so those term vested, there's about 100 term vesteds, which are people that don't work here anymore but are still owed a future pension. About 25 of them are over age 65. So I think it would be prudent to maybe try and start finding some of those people. I don't know.
I've been working on
that. Have you?
Yes.
Okay.
Those are the calculations you've been getting
from
me lately.
Good.
Yes.
So, because, yeah, it causes a loss each year that they don't retire. And once you get past 65, the benefits get bumped up by 7.5% each year. And then we're only earning the 6.5%. So each year, these people that should be retiring are kind of causing a small loss for the plan. So I think it's good that we're trying to round them up as much as we can. And if you need any help trying to find people, we have some resources for searches and stuff if we don't know where they live anymore.
Okay, great.
So we'll keep working on that. On the right-hand side, you can see not a lot of movement. Each year, you know, people get a year older, obviously. But for the in-pay people, monthly benefits have stayed pretty consistent. But yeah, everything else kind of moved as we would expect. Everyone, you know, got a year older. So the assets on the left side just gives a kind of quick, rounded reconciliation of what happened during the year. And again, this is ending March 1st. So the benefit payments that were in the other report probably are a little different, but so yeah, you can see the 2.3 million going out in benefit payments, 1.1 coming in. The first column is the market value, so that's kind of what's in the actual trust. But then that smoothed value after we kind of take out some of those gains and losses came in at 24.2 million. So that means we would expect that they'll converge. So eventually, you're going to recognize more gains over the next 5 years. So your actual smooth value will continue to go up, unless you have some big losses that we have to add on top. On the right, we kind of like to show these charts. You can see the black line is that smoothed value. The market value shows the volatility that we would have had to recognize if we weren't smoothing. So we like to see that kind of cut right through the middle like that. It's showing that it's working like we expect it to work. And once we get 5 years of history, we've only been doing it for 2 years, so we don't have all of the history of the smooth, but we'll see that same kind of picture of the rate of return for the smooth value will cut right through that. So we don't always want to have one of the lines above or one of them below, because that kind of shows that we're it's not working how we would want it to work. Any questions on data or assets? Before we move on to results. Okay. So this compares last year to this year. You can see that accrued liability was about 30.2 million. And that's just the value, kind of the value in today's dollars of all the future benefits we expect to be paid. You can see that 24.2 is that smoothed value of assets. And that gives you just over, or just a hair under 6 million in unfunded, and the 80.1%. And then if we look at the market value, we're seeing it's about 82.9% funded. And then that actuarial value over market value, that's just kind of a check for our own purposes. You don't want to have those get too far apart. And then at the bottom, it shows, so the main piece of your contribution is that unfunded amortization, which we're down to, I believe, 7 years that we have left? Because we're going to 2032, I think, was the goal. So we have 7 years left this year, so that's basically taking that hair under 6 million and unfunded and spreading it out over 7 years, kind of like you would a mortgage. We add a hair of interest just because of the timing is typically around this time that you make the contribution. So you can see the total was that, just a hair over 1 million. Any questions about the results? So then the next couple slides are looking at projected contributions under a couple different scenarios. This first one shows if you earn your 6.5% every year, which, you know, we know isn't going to be perfect, but on average we expect the contributions as those gains that we saw need to be recognized from the smooth. You'll see those first couple years are still higher, but as we get those returns kind of recognized, it'll be just below 800,000 we expect. And that's on average if we get that 6.5%. So that's kind of the, you know, baseline, I guess we call it. So yeah, so that's kind of the expected if we earn exactly what is expected. So this next one, it's kind of a, you know, it's a bad case. I expect that you would probably fire your asset manager if you earn 5.5% every year. So don't miss that many years in a row. The contributions might get up. So that would be kind of you know, a worst case scenario. If you, you know, missed your benchmark every single year, your contributions would obviously go up. So that's kind of if you miss it year over year. We also kind of wanted to show a worst case, kind of a, I don't know, a shock to the system, if you will. So this shows what could happen if you have a huge loss in the first year. So if you lose 20% of your assets and then go back to the 6.5% for the rest of the time, you'll really see the contributions ramp up. And this does, so you guys, on your funding policy, if your contribution was going to jump up by more than 25%, then we kind of bring it back down to only 25%. And then we amortize that next piece over 5 years. So that's why you kind of see the last, it never really goes to zero under this case, because we have that 25% jump. But this would assume, you know, lose 20% and you don't get that 20% back the next year or 2 years. So usually when we see a big downturn like that, we see some recovery. So this doesn't really, you know, assume that there's going to be recovery. It's kind of a worst case scenario if there was a big market correction. So that's kind of worst case scenario. We want to, you know,
so who besides Tony loses their job in this scenario? Does it trickle down to me?
Who doesn't?
Or maybe I would be not predicting the future well enough. Yeah, we just like to show kind of a shock. So if that ever was to happen, you know, you've been warned. This next one is a couple of surveys that we look at, kind of a benchmark. This first is NASRA. It's a really common public plan survey that they do for plans around the country. You can see most of the plans, that highest dark blue line, are at 7%. And that's probably, in my own book of business, it's probably more than half of my plans are at that 7%. But you guys are a little more conservative. You're at that 6.5%, which at this year, about 25% of people, 25% of plans are in that range. And you can see it's really been a shift. We kind of show what it used to look like, that red line. People were using a much higher rate. And so that's continued to creep down over time. When I first started my career, 8% was the discount rate. So it's been crazy to see how it's come down. And we have another survey. I don't like this one as much this year because they had a change in methods, kind of. So if you compare last year to this year, there's some wacky results that we're seeing. But that was mostly from a change in methods. So we think going forward, this will be more stable. But you can see amortization periods, they're around, you know, 18 to 23, you know, years. So you guys are much more conservative. Yeah, and then the interest rate just keeps moving down. But again, I think that is probably due to the, you know, readjustment of the methods that they use. So I like the NASR survey better, the one on the prior page this year. Then this last thing I wanted to talk about was, so the Society of Actuaries, kind of our, you know, powers that be, they routinely go through and do a huge mortality study where they'll look at thousands and thousands of lives to come up with kind of a nationwide kind of general mortality table. Most plans are too small to kind of come up with their own. You'd have to be like a huge, you know, 20,000 lives to have it be a credible study to do it on your own. So we rely on these tables. So you guys, so the public safety is, you can kind of disregard that. This was a generic slide for both. So that top one, the life expectancy for the general employees. So Pub 2010 was the last one that they put out. You can see that once someone got to age 65, they were living, the men were living another 86 and a half years. Women were expected to live until 89. And the new table, that Pub 2016, improvements weren't as high as they expected. So they're seeing a little bit lower. But it's still, you know, it's pretty much in line with what they saw before. It just didn't improve quite as quickly as they would have expected. And so we would recommend changing to this. It just came out, so I don't think we need to go back and look at 2025 results, but for 2026, we would recommend going to this new table. It's going to lower the liabilities less than 1%, probably more like 0.5%, so it's not going to be a huge adjustment, but auditors will start to look for this in the next year or two once the new table comes out. So as long as you guys are okay, I don't know if it's a big enough deal that we'd have to vote on it, but... Yeah, it's pretty small, and it's in your favor. I think if it was going to go the other way, maybe, but it'll be, you know, 0.5% lower. So we'll plan, if you guys are okay with it, we'll plan to change that for 2026.
I don't see the problem.
Cool. All right, we'll plan to change that. That's the last thing on the cover. This just kind of gives a snapshot of what assumptions we're using. Yeah, you can see that 7-year remaining on the amortization at the bottom there. And then my legalese. Any questions? I know we went through that kind of quick.
Questions, comments? Seeing none, we'll go to the next item on the agenda, which is review and possible discussion on minimum education training program. Stand by, Michelle.
We have
Michelle.
Yeah, I was gonna.
I didn't know if you wanted to go back to that.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I apologize. I skipped an agenda item. Agenda item number 4 is report and possible discussion on the annual audit report presented by Aaron.
What's that?
So, well, they're gonna pull that up for Aaron. I wanted to take a minute. Real quick, just to thank Susan Alamon and David Jones here. This is our controller and our senior accountant. They do the retirement audit from start to finish. I just kind of look at things once in a while and go, yeah, okay. So now they've done, this is David's second one. This is Susan's first one. They do a fantastic job. So I just wanted to recognize them and thank them for all their hard work.
Thank you. You guys make it so easy for us. So, I appreciate you.
Absolutely. All right. Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Aaron Worthman. I'm the lead audit principal, and I'm pleased to present the fiscal year 2025 benefit plan audit. So, what I want to do first is just go through an audit overview. Exactly what is it that we do as part of our audit? Then wanna go through our audit results, and then lastly, go through the required communications to you charged with governance. So just to take a step back and look at the audit overall, so our firm spends about 100 hours conducting the audit of your benefit plan. And I'd say this year, similar to prior years, the audit went very well. You know, we talked earlier about the financial audit. The good thing about the benefit plan audit, it's the scope is significantly smaller, certainly, but we talked about accounting changes before. There really haven't been many accounting changes in the last couple of years. So again, very straightforward audit. We conducted our field work May 13th through May 15th. After that time, we then reviewed the financial statements and prepared our opinion. But again, management and staff were very cooperative, readily available, and it was, again, a very smooth and effective audit this year. So if we take a look at the audit process, similar to this morning, again, 30% of what we do is specific to internal controls, most of which is going to be in the information technology space. But what I've done here is I've kind of outlined some of the things that we do relative to that testing. You know, certainly we look at risk. We interview employees, we do fraud risk interviews to get their thoughts relative to fraud, internal controls, things to that extent. We document the business processes, we determine where the control should be, test those for effectiveness. But again, that's 30%. 40% of what we do then is what we call our substantive tests. That would be confirming your cash and investments with outside parties and taking a look at the fair value. We use specialist reports, those actuarial reports, we rely on that. What we do then is we test some of the assumptions within the actuarial report, make sure they're reasonable, take a look at census data, make sure what the actuaries provided is what we see and can audit as well. And then again, we always trace to source documents, whether those are bank statements or, again, an actuary report is a source doc. That is basically what we base our testing on. And then what I want to do is outline the major transactional areas we look at. I think none of these should come as a surprise. You know, certainly we spend a lot of time looking at your cash and investments. That's probably most of what we do. Also look at payroll, the disbursements, contributions to the plan, participant data, the service organization reports, you know, the principal bank, et cetera, and then the financial reporting lastly. So our audit is performed in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. Those are the standards that we're required to follow as your audit firm. Our audit objective is to obtain reasonable assurance that your financial statements are free from material misstatement. At the end of this year's audit, your financial statements have received an unmodified opinion, which is also known as a clean opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that we can provide as your audit firm. Now, we do provide an opinion on your financials, and I talked a little bit about internal controls, but I did want to note we do not provide an opinion on internal controls. However, if we identify control breakdowns or deficiencies, we're required to categorize that in area severity. The most severe would be what we call a material weakness, and that would be anything or any breakdown or lack of controls that could lead to more than a reasonable possibility financial statements could be materially misstated, and we did not identify any material weaknesses. The next categorization down, less severe than a material weakness, would be what we call significant deficiency. That definition is, you know, it's big enough that it warrants your attention as governance. We did not identify any significant deficiencies as part of this year's audit. So one of the documents you have is what we call our audit insights and results letter. Within that document, we have a section for our required communications. Some things I want to just touch on and highlight quickly. Again, auditor independence. Did want to note that our firm and every individual on our audit team is independent with your organization, in fact, in appearance. There were no changes in accounting principles or no new accounting principles that were implemented. You know, we often get questions when you take a look at those financials. What areas should you concentrate on, or you know, what could be the limitation of those statements? And I will say they almost always have to do with an estimate, so much so, in fact, that as your auditor, we're required to point out what significant estimates are within your financial statements. So the two big ones you have, obviously, is the fair value of your investments. And then lastly is your pension plan assumptions. You know, the biggest one that was talked about earlier was this discount rate, the 6.5%. You saw the significant changes through time, but those would be the biggest estimates that you have within your statements. We did not have any adjusting journal entries or waived entries as part of this year's audit, which is great. And no significant audit findings or concerns. Just know if we ever did have a concern as part of the audit, this wouldn't be the first time you'd be hearing about it. We'd reach out to you when we discovered those to have those discussed on a timely basis. So then lastly, we'd just like to thank everyone for their help. Susan and David, you know, did a great job. No findings, which is always great, but you know, I'd mentioned we spent 100 hours working on this audit. Although your team may not spend 100 hours, there's a significant amount of time that goes into it on their end as well, and we thank them for that. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions anyone might have on the audit.
Questions or comments for Aaron?
My only comment is I think you did a good job on it. That's it.
Seeing no other questions, we'll go to agenda item number 5, report and possible discussion of minimum education training program presented by Michelle.
So this is at least once a year, you all have the, I'm not going to call it the joy, the fun distinction of being the only, the opportunity, thank you, opportunity, the only committee that has educational requirements. And so at least once a year, I like to round and touch base with you all and let you know where everybody is. The Pension Review Board made changes to these requirements in October of 2024. So this is kind of our first reporting after those changes. And so you can see we have core classes that everybody is required to take within 1 year of being appointed to the committee. You have 12 months, it's 8 hours. So we have one person who has until the end of December to finish taking the core classes. And then after that, you have to take 2 hours of continuing education every calendar year. And so we have a couple folks, Jen and Christine, who have till the end of December to finish those 2 hours. And then everybody else is out in December 2026. I've included here just kind of these were the changes and the transition to the new rules from the Pension Review Board that kind of talks about when your first year service status was on December 31st, 2024, and then when your continuing education cycle would start. And then this is some information on how to get the training. We've kind of discovered from the Pension Review Pension Board's website, they've got some nice little short, you know, hour and a half, half hour online classes that make it easy to get your 2 hours, but they've only got like 6 classes out there. So if you go 3 years, you've taken them all, but we can call the Pension Review Board and have them reset it so you can go back. And oh boy, take them over again if you want to. But if you find that a little too dry or you want to do something different, we're trying to find other things besides Pension Review Board, but it's kind of hard because, especially for the continuing education, you know, where you just need 2 hours, most of the stuff out there is 4 hours, 8 hours. It's more geared toward core. It's also more geared towards fire departments and not really, unless you just really want to learn a lot about fire departments, you could take them to
Would the fire department account for this?
It could, even though it...
Maybe theirs aren't so dry.
Maybe. And then just a last thing, just a reminder to everybody is if you do take training, especially on Pension Review Board, you'll get your certificate, and if you could just take that certificate and send it to me or Melody Trimble, our admin, we have to report to the pension review board every year, continuing education you've taken, so. And then just instructions on how to get the pension review board's online training.
Will you email that to me?
Sure.
And probably Christine too.
Okay.
She just took a picture, but email's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are any questions?
I appreciate your all's efforts in contribution to the committee and willing to do the continuing education, because the other committees don't have to do that, and you have to mess with something you don't probably want to do more than I do, but it's just part of the game. If there are no other questions, we'll go to our next agenda item, which is agenda item number 6, report and possible discussion on pension plan advisor request for proposals presented by Michelle.
So I realize the timing on this is probably just a little bit awkward for Tony.
I'm happy to step out of the room, by the way, so you can have a honest discussion. Particularly since the returns are really good.
But our current contract with Mariner Institutional is gonna expire at the end of April. So this is mainly kind of talk through the timeline of going through an RFP to have an investment advisor in place by then. And so the first thing we're wanting to do is advertise by November 10th.
Can I ask a question before you get too far in that? So I vaguely remember the last time we went through this and we decided we were gonna do this every so often.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remind me what that so often was?
Well, this contract was assigned in April of 2021. So it's every 5 years.
And it feels like just yesterday.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah.
The pension one we did a couple years ago, I suppose.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe
that one. I remember that one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then Baker Tilly, I think y'all were good until, yeah.
We just did his.
Eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 5 years is a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty common.
Yeah, I agree. I think five is good.
Don't say anything wrong. It's not great results, but you need to go to the market, I think, every 5 years to do our financial responsibility to the organization.
That's what I'm saying. We want to show we're fiscally responsible and that we're giving everyone a shot at it. And we like Tony, but we got to make sure we're responsible. Yeah.
I agree.
So yeah, just 5 years ago. So we look at advertising the RFP around November the 10th. December 5th would be the last date and time for the respondents to ask questions or request additional information from the BRA. December 10th, we would have to post those responses to those questions as an addendum. The responses would be due December 18th. The proposals will be opened on December 19th. During the month of January, BRA staff will evaluate the responses based on criteria and choose hopefully the top three. And then in conjunction with the January board meeting, we would have another retirement committee meeting to interview the top three respondents. In February and March, we would negotiate a contract with the top-ranked firm that was chosen by the committee. And then in March, we would have another quick retirement committee meeting to approve the resolution authorizing the general manager to execute that contract. And it would go into effect April 27th of 2026.
The only part of that that I don't really love is that we're gonna do the interviews during the same time as a board meeting. If I remember right, the last time we did this, each interview was like an hour long, right? And so that would make a super long day for us.
Okay.
What do you think, Ford? Should we, I'm really just putting my opinion out there because I don't wanna rush it along because we have a board meeting right after. But then I wanna give people time to talk too. So I wonder if we should do it on a day that's not a board meeting day.
Let me guess me a question. On most of your RFP interviews, assuming you're always at the top, what do you normally, what amount of time are you normally allowed for your presentation?
Yeah, I'd say we're seeing for virtual interviews actually shorter, 30 minutes.
Don't talk about virtual, I don't do virtual.
Yeah, we can't do virtual.
Can't do virtual.
I don't want to do virtual.
Yeah, so 30 minutes with 15 minutes of Q&A is still pretty common.
So an hour, 20,
yeah.
Okay. I agree with you, Jen. I think 3 hours before a board meeting is just too much sugar for a Diane. What do y'all think about having a board a committee meeting the week before?
Okay. I'm willing to drive here for it.
We could. I live in Waco, so let me be all. I live in Waco, so it's not a problem to get here. If the committee would rather have it virtual, that's I don't have a problem with that because I can come here.
I don't like the idea of virtual.
No virtual.
No.
Great.
Okay.
I'm good with that. So like the week before, so that would put it, when is the board meeting in March?
March?
Probably the
January.
January 29th.
It would be probably the 26th, the last.
Okay.
Monday?
So maybe like the, is Monday the better day of the week since that's kind of what we do normally? Why don't we tentatively put it the week before?
And that's Martin Luther King Day. Are
y'all
open or closed?
Closed.
But.
The 20th, the
Tuesday?
Is that, are you suggesting?
I don't mind.
March 23rd?
January.
January.
Oh, January.
Before the board meeting in January, which is the 26th.
So I think we could hold a committee meeting on a state holiday, but there wouldn't be much staff here, so it would pretty much be David and probably you, Michelle, right?
No, I don't want to.
We have to have the IT people here.
You deserve a holiday.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for David.
Let's do it the Tuesday. So that'd be the.
The Tuesday, it would be the 20th?
20th of January.
Okay.
That's the day after my birthday, I'm okay with that.
What's, since you, who has to drive the farthest?
Probably Christine.
I'm good with it, I'm fine.
So you can come to knock morning four, so 10 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning?
What?
Nine o'clock in the morning, get to 12. That'd be good.
That's good for me. Is that good for you?
I'll be here whenever, I'm fine with it.
Let's definitely put it at nine on the 20th.
I won't have to go because it won't be an option.
Nine.
At nine.
Okay.
That'll get us through at noon. You're right, Mike, by lunch. Aunt.
We've been known to do that.
Better bring her some cupcakes or something.
Yeah.
That's right.
Lunch and birthday
cupcakes.
Maybe
I'll bring donuts. Brown Rock donuts.
That's even better idea. Did you put that on the schedule?
Let's have a health fair celebration in Brown Rock.
Yeah, it'd be not much more fun.
So for, did you say the 20th?
Yes.
So
20th. Where is it? 9 o'clock in the morning. Lunch provided by the BRA after.
9, 10, 11.
You really are demanding a lot.
Well, we got to do continuing education. We got to get something.
You got to get something for all that continuing education.
I actually like our continuing education. I learn something every year.
Don't you get paid?
That's the reason we're doing it.
Right?
What a concept.
Don't you get paid for those days where you sit in front of the computer and do that?
I hadn't thought about doing it. I was sending a report on that.
You'd either
send
that
in. But that's not a bad idea.
You're doing BRA business.
I mean, that sounds like a great David question. I think you should ask him.
I will.
Right.
On your behalf.
So we've rescheduled for the interviews. He's got an advantage because he knows where our schedule is. I saw him take a picture of it, so he's got on top of everything. Any other questions or comments? Great, Jake, job on the timeline. I think that's excellent.
I'm a planner.
Okay. there's not anything else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn this committee.
I motion adjourn.
I'll second.
A motion and a second, all in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned at 9:45.